Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Good evening, friends. You found another episode of the Video Nasty Project. I am your host, Tony, and these are the 72 movies so disgusting and depraved that Mary Whitehouse and the Moral Guardians would be afraid that you would be corrupted by just looking at them. What's on tap for tonight? Tonight, we're taking a look at a movie called Delirium. No, not the Lamberto Bava movie, don't get your hopes up. No, we're taking a look at Delirium, starring a whole bunch of people you've never ever heard of before. Let's roll the trailer.
On January 27, 1973, the United States and North Vietnam signed a peace treaty, bringing to an end the senseless killing. But for some, the war didn't end. The battlefields may have changed, but the killing continues. Vietnam, but about some of the men who survived it, and the point of stress that the human mind can endure.
You're talking about killing an innocent girl. Now, this organization was formed to protect the innocent.
Delirium. Coming soon to a theater or drive-in near you. Don't miss it.
And welcome back. We just got done watching Delirium. Look at this fucking cover art. This is fucking amazing cover art.
Wow.
Hey, Cambot, put this up on still store for me, will you?
That's like Telly Savalas pretending to be Shiva.
He's got like the six arms, and he's just swinging this meat cleaver like a motherfucker, and he's got like his other two arms like with like holding this gun.
And there's explosions and like Apocalypse Now kind of thing, and a hitchhiker with really coming
showing
by.
Off a little bit of ass.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, much like most VHS movies, the cover art is far superior to the actual movie.
But unlike a lot of exploitation covers, almost the entirety of that cover appears in the movie.
Everything
on the cover does appear in the movie at one point or another, including the Daisy Duke hitchhiker.
Yeah. It's actually accurate for once.
So the movie starts out with these two dudes in the middle of the night on the banks of the Mississippi River, because the movie takes place in New Orleans. Not New Orleans, no.
St. Louis.
So the movie takes place in St. Louis, and they're on the banks of the Mississippi River, and they get this dead body out of the trunk, and they roll it into the water. It splashes, and they get in the cart and drive off. Cut to this hot young thing coming home from a late night party. And she goes up into her third floor apartment, opens the door, and there's her roommate nailed to the door with a spear through the back.
So this lady immediately, you know, she screams bloody murder, and eventually the cops come and they take her deposition to find out what the hell's going on. They search her roommate's room. And
the cops, they're the worst cops in the world, because they're all like, they find some panties on the dining room floor or something, and they all pick it up, and it's like, She they're not torn. She obviously took them off herself. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's not detectiving work. That's not anything but, you know, 70s misogyny.
And so they basically slowly start building a case, trying to find this murderer named Charlie, who ends up basically killing his way across the countryside in Missouri. He's shown in flashback, actually chasing this woman around because he's having memory, you know, distorted memory, PTSD flashbacks.
I was totally bored by the flashbacks, even though there was gunfire and explosions and things happening. It was like, oh, they're doing a flashback again. That actually was a low point for me.
And they have to go to this lady who's a secretary. They have to go to her boss to find out what the hell's going on. He's giving them nothing. And this is immediately made me suspicious. Oh, I don't remember the guy's last name. Wait a minute. Okay, you've got a guy coming in to a job interview. You send him away because he doesn't have references, and you don't remember his last name, and you're the boss who has to look at this guy. I mean, any boss worth their salt is going to want to know the first and last name of a person so they can check stuff. And he doesn't remember his last name even though he recently saw him.
So we follow Charlie for a little bit as he wanders across the countryside. He picks up a hitchhiker who is, you know, hey, can I get a ride? And he stops. She jumps in. He doesn't say a word, speeds off, is acting creepy as fuck, driving really, really fast, trying to scare her. She's freaking out a little bit. Hey, what's wrong? Slow down. We're going to crash. He slams on the brakes, skids off to the side of the road, gets out, walks down to the Mississippi, and sits on the bank and just kind of starts throwing rocks into the water.
The weirdest thing about this movie is she follows him and goes down to the river, takes off her clothes, and goes for a swim.
As you do back in those days.
To a guy who was trying to scare her and was creeping her the hell out. This is the weirdest thing about this entire movie.
God, I hated that.
Yeah, I don't know any woman who would strip in front of a guy that's like that.
So, of course, Charlie, oh my God, I'm having seizures or mental problems, and gets up and grabs her and strangles her underwater and drowns her. Yeah. You've got Charlie running around killing people, and that's subplot A. Then subplot B is this mysterious cabal of, like, we're not really sure, mysterious people in a bunker somewhere. And they're run by Telly Savalas, wearing the aviator glasses.
And smoking cigars.
And they apparently are doing the Punisher or the Paul Kersey.
Right.
We're taking some sleeper agents and sending them to go out and murdering people.
Yeah, this has got Exterminator written all over it, at least with Charlie. And with the rest of them, when Frank Castle kills people, it's punishment. It's usually people that deserve it. But these guys are stepping over the line, at least two of them. There are two guys that do all the dirty work. And one of them is kind of the willing to do anything to fulfill the objective, which is to keep society safe. These guys are supposed to be vigilantes who are trying to save, you know, the city from rapists and killers.
And that's where they started out originally, whereas if the criminal gets off with too light a sentence or gets off altogether, they assemble this kangaroo court, they bring the suspect in, and they judge him and execute him. The third subplot, on the other hand, is showing the cops in a terrible light because the third subplot is following the secretary whose roommate was killed and whose boss is denying that, hey, I never saw this dude, I never got any of his paperwork when he applied for a job. So we follow her as she tries to uncover what the hell's going on with her boss, and one of the cops is being all completely inappropriate and hitting on her, and hey, baby, let's go have dinner.
Yeah, but that was, and you got to remember, this is back in the 70s, this was very common. This was on TV and movies and everywhere. It was very standard way of doing stuff. And once she starts getting her own detective, you know, thing going on, it really kicks into gear because she eventually uncovers this kangaroo court hidden away on her own.
Because her boss is linked in with it.
And she basically does that by picking up the phone out on her desk while her boss is in his office talking to this fake Telly Savalas about, he has a problem with the killing. He's actually one of the guys that doesn't believe you kill innocent people, only the guilty. And he can't convince his boss of it,
So the first half of the movie is Charlie doing murders, and then once Charlie dies halfway through the movie, that's where the wind gets taken out of the sails for me. I'm like, I don't care about this movie anymore because the interesting bit just got killed.
Because basically, okay, the setup, here's the setup. He goes into a house where a woman's having a bath. It's one of these big-ass estates. It looks like one of those antebellum-type houses. She's all alone in her house. She's taking a bath. He goes in, goes into the kitchen, gets something to eat because he's starving, grabs something, it's big-ass butcher knife. Meat cleaver. Goes upstairs, and then this van shows up with a guy bringing her stuff. He looks like one of the members of, like, Lynyrd Skynyrd or Motorhead or something like that, or the Hudson Brothers.
But he's a delivery guy.
And obviously. And as I said, he's bringing her something. And he comes in and says, hey, are you home? And this sets Charlie off. He goes downstairs with a cleaver, takes this guy out. She comes to the foot of the stairs. She doesn't do nothing. She has this look on her face. She doesn't scream. She disappears for a few seconds, comes back with a shotgun, and then as Charlie's advancing on her, blam!
And he just blows her away.
Yeah, she big hole in the stomach. He falls dead. And I was expecting him to move and get back up like Michael Myers and kill her.
Yeah, I was expecting maybe he would come back later towards the end of the movie. He would have some sort of relevance.
No.
He doesn't do anything. He just dies halfway through the movie.
But I thought that was actually a braver choice, and I'll tell you why. Because back in those days, when you had movies, it was always predictable that the bad guy's going to get it near the end. So you put all your energy into this big-ass chase with explosions or whatever, and everything draws to a conclusion. But here, now you've got the second focus, which is Charlie. The first focus is the secretary. She's the first character, really, that you see, and Charlie is the motivator, but she's actually the protagonist. It's her POV of what everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. She's connected to everybody. So you take him out of it, but then she's got no protection against the cabal. And with him running around as a loose cannon, he was basically dividing the police force. So now they can narrow their focus and try and get these guys.
You know, in a better script, in a better movie, I think killing your villain halfway through and then picking up with the secret society, you know, this kind of star chamber thing could have been interesting, but they didn't develop the star chamber enough. They didn't develop why everything is going on. They didn't develop any context to any of this.
It actually is a fairly reasonably good plot. It's one of the things that kept me interested in it, but all of the execution of the plot was weak.
The biggest problem that this movie has, aside from the terrible acting, the no money, the terrible direction, terrible script, and just general malaise of plot, it just leaves us with a boring mystery that...
And one of the things that I found really funny is they referred to a mystery TV show. One of the 70s... No, Policewoman.
They said that's no Angie Dickinson.
I'm thinking, well, this strikes me as one of those 70s TV shows. It looks exactly like it was shot for TV, but they added gore and boobs and stuff, nakedness to it.
Or just a movie of the week on ABC. And you could, with very little trimming, run this on network television in the 70s. There's nothing to this movie.
All that taken into consideration, this always has struck me as more of a judgment call on the part of some of the people in the BBFC rather than the entire body. I think they just took it straight across the board because we have to have a stiff upper lip and agree on this, so we'll never agree on anything. So my thought on this is that the more powerful or louder people in the room always got their way.
There are some strengths to this film. The music is good.
There's some very good
sequences involving musical pieces. One bit I particularly like is the bit where after the secretary has been spying on her boss and she sees him leave the office, she goes out to her car and follows him. And there's this wonderful sequence of music and cityscape shots of St. Louis as she's driving around.
The one thing I do want to say about this movie that I found just really, it was accidentally gorgeous, is Charlie goes into this woman's house, the woman who's taking the bath, and he goes into the kitchen. Well, for a few seconds there, he's standing in the doorway from the dining room or living room to the kitchen, and he's outlined and silhouetted against all these kind of like orange colors or whatever, and curtains in the background in front of the window to the outside. And I thought, this is a great framing shot, and the colors are really freaking gorgeous.
Yeah, that's one thing that they did really well is a lot of the establishing shots and framing shots and static shots were beautiful. There was one shot that I particularly like where you see this falling down ruin of a house kind of on a ridge, and it's shot through the a section of barbed wire fence. And it's just like, wow, that is so beautiful. And you see Charlie kind of trudging along, and he goes up to the house and sits down against the wall. And it's like, but that establishing shot was like, this is beautiful. And they did some other really nice things like that too.
And stuff.
So the frustrating thing about the movie is that you see nuggets of this could be a really good idea. The really good cinematography, the good setups, the story on paper looks like it could be a decent story. But it's just the execution where it completely falls down on all the points.
And the scale of it is just too small for what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of tight close-ups. You never get, a lot of the time, any idea of the scope of where these guys are. Okay, so the fake Telly Savalas starts out in this office, and he looks like he has a lot of money. In fact, he looks like he has more money than the guy who runs this business, who works for him. And I thought, oh, this guy's in a position of power, obviously. But then we get to the Star Chamber, and there's nothing. It's like all black walls and stuff, and you never get an idea of, are they moneyed guys working out of someplace secret but big, or are they desperate desperados in some little, it turns out it's a fucking honeycomb hideout.
You're looking at the outside of the place, and it's this run-down warehouse-looking thing, and I'm like, okay, that's probably just a front. No, they get inside. Yeah, it's exactly what you would expect on the inside is from what you saw on the outside.
Which makes sense, because this is a small group of guys. They're post-war vets, and maybe they didn't have a lot of money, but they're going out and trying to make the world a better place, but they're committing acts of murder to do it.
And it gets back to the movie just is poorly executed. Like, the end fight with the shootout between they finally figure out where to go, and the cops show up to the Cabal's secret warehouse, and then Telly Savalas, he realizes the gig is up, and he grabs an AK-47, runs upstairs and starts gunning people down in the loading dock. And it's just this boring, you know, Telly Savalas takes a shot, it's a static shot, cuts to the cop, he takes a shot, cut to Telly, shot, back and forth. There's no energy, there's no dynamic flow to the combat. It's just two people shooting at each other, and it was crap.
It became a little more interesting when he started having flashbacks, because the police helicopter going overhead, and he thought it was a Huey.
In the patties
in the war, and he's like, well, what? What's that? Oh, it's time to go. Time to go, everybody. Get to the LZ. You know, and the cops are like, he's walked out in the open, and the cops are like, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah, he's just standing there, come get me, out in the open. And they're like, he's crazy, shoot him, and they gun him down.
Well, actually, one of the more interesting scenes in flashback was Charlie remembering when he was with a Vietnamese woman, you know, in the middle of VC territory, and he's going to go have sex with this woman. And she's like, oh, I'll give you a good time, you know? And then he up and leaves. He can't do it. He strangles her, and then the whole thing turns into a whole big fuster cluck of, I can't do it. I killed people, so I got to kill more people like her.
So he's murdering a bunch of women out of sexual inadequacy, and we're making the assumption the script really doesn't explain fully. Again, another failing of the script.
Well, yeah, because he never talks, ever. I mean, you never find out if the motivation is the guilt or hatred for women or both. And I think the one thing that would have made this a really strong movie is if this might be a stereotypical kind of thing, a gimme in some movies, if he'd come across a Vietnamese woman or a woman of some indeterminate East Asian persuasion, Chinese, Korean, whatever, and conflated her with the woman he'd killed and had to come to terms with that of some kind and couldn't do it.
That would have definitely made this movie more interesting. The one and only time we see him killing somebody that's not a woman is the poor delivery guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a matter of surprise and redirection.
So we've talked mostly about the front half of the movie where Charlie's doing his thing and where all the setup is. What do you guys think about the back half of the movie where it just kind of turns into police running around doing police things?
Well, this has all the hallmarks of French Connection. I've read the French Connection book, and it's a police procedural from one end to the other. It's names, dates, places, explicit, descriptions of who went where and who did what. And this reminded me of that as a movie, to a degree.
But William Blatty, he has skill behind the lens. He knows what he's doing versus this guy who points to the camera and says action.
It is a lot like a police procedural. The one exception to that police feel was the bit with the cabal having... They started falling out. That was kind of interesting. They're falling out with each other, and the fact that they actually do a little bit of inter-cabal violence on each other.
The thing is, they have a philosophy.
Yeah.
And they follow it. And their philosophy is that if you commit an act of murder or rape or something like that, you have to suffer, period.
Which was part of the 70s zeitgeist with... You know, why Death Wish was in Ascension, why, you know, everybody in New York hated being in New York because it was such a festering pit of crime.
Any thoughts?
There's just not much to talk about this movie from me because it just is there. It's just...
Dead weight.
It's neither feast nor famine. If it was a terrible movie and we could rip into it and I could get excited about ripping into it, yay. If it was a great movie, if it was Tenebrain and we were like, yes, fuck yes, this is the best movie on the list, I can get into it. But it's just kind of middle of the road. There's nothing to it for me.
It's mildly entertaining. I would not watch this movie again. But, you know, for my one and only watching of it, it was okay. But... You know, like you said, it wasn't horrible. It wasn't good. It needed more things in it to make it better.
It really needed a budget. It needed a second pass on the script. It needed a director who at least had a vision versus I'm just going to set up the camera and call action.
It's like the director never really was around. I mean, people were just kind of going through the motions of acting and the filmmaking process without anybody telling them to do anything.
I mean, there were a couple of instances where one actor, the police captain, came over and he dropped a line for a fraction of a second, you know, and they obviously didn't go back and fix it, or maybe that was the best take they had from this guy.
At the end of the day, for me, for the movie, it felt like you had... two people hired to be the scriptwriters, and the producer went to them and handed them each the outline and said, go away, come back in a couple of days, write with a script. And he didn't let them talk to each other, and they came back and took both scripts and kind of fused it in this big, mushy mess of mess.
We've seen this sort of approach before in a few of the other movies that we've looked at, and in all instances, it doesn't work for us.
Well, I guess you could conflate this with those Chinese chop sakis from the 70s, the Thomas Tang and what's his name, Joseph Lai things. They took two unrelated movies, packed and slashed them into a single film, so like Hard Bastard and stuff like that.
It's a fucking Godfrey Ho movie.
Yeah,
Godfrey Ho.
Yeah, that
fuck
guy.
Fuck you, Godfrey Ho.
Not just like there's three different plot lines going on. It's like at the point where Charlie gets killed, it's like it becomes a completely different movie that just happens to have elements from earlier on.
All right, so there you go. There you go.
All right, and there it is.
A fucking Godfrey Ho movie. So, Delirium. Should that have been on the list?
I don't think so.
Appropriately left off?
No. There was hardly anything objectionable about this movie at all.
The only thing I could think that landed on the list was probably the first kill where the spear goes through the back of the one lady and you get blood on the breast. And as we know, that's a BBFC no-no.
The one thing that could have gotten it in hot water was the fact that all of Charlie's killings are of women, which some could view as being completely misogynistic.
It was a very strongly misogynistic movie.
So I don't think there's anything in this movie that should have it on the list.
Yeah, I full-heartedly agree with there.
All right, acquitted, all around. This episode, our episode right here, is more violent and more disgusting than this thing. Did you like Delirium?
I enjoyed it for the most part. It wasn't very good, but it wasn't bad either. It was, you know, mildly enjoyable. The best way I can describe it is like a bowl of oatmeal. It's got some fillingness to it. It's got some sustainability. But it's like oatmeal with no raisins or cinnamon or brown sugar. It's kind of dull.
Did you like Delirium?
I liked it. Yeah, it was fun watching. You know, and I don't have any real problems with it. I mean, yes, it got a little boring near the end, but sometimes, you know, it jolts you back into reality. So, it's okay.
There are far and away worse movies on this list. There are far and away better movies on this list. So, I can't really muster up the energy to hate this thing. It just kind of... This movie, if Mary and her friends hadn't raised a conniption fit over it, would have been lost to the ages. Nobody would have heard of this damn thing.
I have to say, I'm glad they bitched about it, because I actually kind of enjoyed it. Even though as low budget as it was at least interesting.
So, bottom line, you liked it, you're meh, I'm kind of just on the border end of thumbs down.
Well, so we get the spectrum.
So we have a full house here today.
Full spectrum of unenthusiastic opinions.
I don't think anybody here is yes about the movie. I think it's all just kind of, it's a thing. So are you feeling delirious yet? Lord knows I am, because that's Delirium back on the shelf. Next week, however, we get back into the don'ts with the educational portion of our list, Don't Go Near the Park, or something like that. It's a movie you've never heard of because nobody's heard of this damn thing. All right, in the meantime, if you actually liked Telly Savalas running around killing a bunch of blokes, drop us an email. The address is thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next week. All right, stay evil.
Would you like for me to arrange to have a policewoman sit with you tonight?
Well, I think I can arrange something.